Last couple of years, we've had the privilege of having Rabbi Marcus address us before Chanukah Purim. Rabbi Marcus is a beloved Rav of Young Israel, Queens Valley, in our neighborhood. Also a beloved Rebbe, and is involved in Tzarchei Tzibur, and it's a tremendous privilege to hear words from Rabbi Marcus.
Thank you, Rabbi Singer, Shus, Sarabanim, Talmidim. When I first came to New York as a teenager to learn in yeshiva, I was coming from the city of Toronto, where I had grown up. And it was a bit of a shock adjusting back in 1991 from life in Toronto to life in New York City. Simply because when I came to New York in 1991, the number of murders that year in this city was approximately 2,154. In the course of 1 year. Now, coming from Toronto, you know, the police are worried about the villains who jaywalk, flouting the rule of red with defiance. And here I come to New York City, I'm sitting in class, and I'm hearing gunshots in the streets. Literally. It's quite a shock. And remarkably, from those days in the early 90s, when there were over 2,000 murders per year in the streets of New York City, this year, there have been, unfortunately, about 300 murders. But that's a remarkable difference in terms of crime statistics. From a city that has seen over 2,000 murders per year, dropping to about 300 murders in a year, what changed? And many theories have been offered and suggested, but one of the perhaps more compelling is the following. The police department in the 1990s decided to institute a new policy of policing. It's known in the criminology world as the broken windows theory. What is the broken windows theory? Broken windows theory means that when you're walking in a neighborhood and you see graffiti scrawled on the walls of the buildings, on the subway cars, when you see windows that are smashed and no one seems to care, what message are you giving the people walking the streets of that neighborhood? The message is, there's no one here who's watching, there's no one here who cares, do whatever you like. And so in the early 90s, when the police were chasing down murderers and kidnappers, they had no time to think or to worry about some teenage artist signing his name in colored paint on someone's truck. But then they decided, no, maybe that's precisely where we should start. And so every night, they scrubbed down every subway car in the New York City system, removed every bit of graffiti. From that point on, they started arresting people for the simple little crimes of graffiti. And I saw it in the streets of Washington Heights. In the early 90s, when you would drive off the George Washington Bridge and stop by the red light by Amsterdam Avenue, there were a team of people known not so fondly as the squeegee guys. These are the guys who carried pails with some disgusting-looking liquid in it. When you stopped at the red light, Nebuch, they dumped their pail on your window shield and then quickly cleaned it off, so to speak, with their squeegee and then charged you for the service. And thankfully, under Giuliani, they got rid of the squeegee guys off the streets. And what they saw remarkably was that suddenly there was a drastic drop in crime. Not in the squeegee guys and the graffiti artists, that too, but in the murders. Sudden drop plummeted. Why? Because the message was, the small things matter too. And we're going to arrest you for the fair beating, for the jumping of the turnstiles, for the scrawling of graffiti, for the disturbance of the peace. And when people on the street got the message that the small things matter, they certainly understood the big things matter even more. There's a gewaltige Musa there. So often we're inclined to think, the small things in life, no one cares, doesn't matter what I do. But the correct Hashgaf HaZachayim is that everything matters, especially the small things that you are so inclined to dismiss, thinking they're insignificant. Look at the beautiful words of the Nefesh HaChaim, of Chaim Volozhiner, in Shar Aleph, Perek Dalid. Chaim Volozhiner writes, V'zos Toras HaAdam, Kol Ish Yisrael, Al Yomar Belibo Chas V'Shalom. Don't think for a moment. Kimani Ma Kochi Lifal B'Maisei HaShvelim. What can I accomplish anyways? My actions are all insignificant. I can't accomplish anything. What I do doesn't matter. Chas V'Shalom. Omnam Yavin V'Yeda V'Yikva B'Machshavas Libo. You should know, you should remember. Shekol prate maisa vidiburo v'machshavosav. Everything you do, everything you say, everything you think. Lo isavidu chas v'shalom. They're never ever lost. At any moment. Umarabu maisav. Umaudgadlu v'ramu. How incredibly significant every action, every word you think and say is capable. Lifol pu'ulasa, to accomplish begavhei meromim. When the Mishnah in Avos says, Dam alamala mimcha, doesn't just mean know what's above you, ayin roa ozen shamas. What it means is, da, you should know, malamala, you know what's happening in Shemayim, mimcha. It's all because of you. Everything you do impacts Shemayim. Every small maisa you do, every small word you utter, every machshava you think, mimcha, has an amazing impact in the upper worlds of Shemayim. Think about the following remarkable Maimer Chazal. Yalkut Shemoni, the sixth parasha. Vayishma Ruvain, vayatzilehu miyadam. Ruvain hears his brother's plotting to kill Yosef. He puts an end to it. Vayomer lo nakenu nafesh, don't kill anybody. Hashlichu oso labor hazeh asha b'midbar, throw him into the pit. Why is Ruvain saying that? L'man hatzil oso miyadam l'hashiv al aviv. To save Yosef's life, to return him to his father. Says the Yalkut Shemoni, remarkable Maimer Chazal. Ilu Yahya Yodea Ruvain. Had Ruvain known, Shakarish Barchu Kosev Acharov, Vayishmaru Uvain, Vayatzileo Miyadam. Had Ruvain known what the Torah would write about him, that he saved Joseph's life, says the Yalkut, Biksefav Hayatoano Umalicho Etzel Aviv. He would have carried Yosef on his shoulders back to Yaakov. And the Yalkut says, Limdascha Torah Derecheretz. There's a lesson here. When you do a mitzvah, do it with a great deal of joy. Because had Reuven only known what the Torah would say about him, that he saved his brother, he would have carried him on his shoulders back to Yaakov. So the kasha is obvious. Reuven is looking for the kavod. He's looking for the compliments. He wants to be forever more known in the history books for doing a good deed. And had he known that he would have been written in the Torah like this, he would have done it even better, even grander, even more thoroughly. He's after the kavod Reuven. What's the Medrash mean? So Yaakov Kamenetsky has a gewaltige pshat. Says as follows. What the Medrash means to say is that Reuven did not fully appreciate what the consequences of that one Maisa Mitzvah could have been. Reuven thought, saving my brother's life, it's pretty important, pretty chashev. But had Reuven known what the ramifications and consequences would have been, had he done so immediately, what would have happened? Had Reuven not just dumped him in a pit, had Reuven Taka carried him back on his shoulders to his father, what would have happened? No Mechiras Yosef. Had there not been a Mechiras Yosef, no Shibur Mitzrayim. Yaakov would never have gone down to Egypt. No Shiva Mitzrayim, no Avdus, no suffering, no persecution of 200 plus years of murders and torture. Had Reuven known what was at stake here, by properly and rushing immediately to save Yosef's life, had he known that Gans Klal Yisrael's future was going to be unbelievably altered as a result of what he would do now, he would have picked him up on his shoulders and run back to Yaakov on the spot. Elamai, why did he put him in the pit instead? He just didn't realize how chashuv that one Maisa Hatzalah could be for the Jewish future. He didn't realize the consequences of that one action. Says the Lialkut, Limdas Chatar Derecher, this is a lesson here. When you do a mitzvah, do it belev sameach. Because if only you knew what might come about as a result of this Maisa Mitzvah, can you imagine what kind of simcha you'd have in doing this one Maisa Mitzvah? If only you appreciated, if only we all appreciated what every Maisa Mitzvah accomplished and would accomplish. So listen to the following story. I heard this directly from the person it happened to. It is an unbelievable story with an incredible lesson. As I said before, I grew up in Toronto. Outside of Toronto, about 45 minutes away, is a city called Hamilton, Ontario. Not so well known for their football team. The Rav of Hamilton for many, many decades was Rabbi Mordechai Green. And he told me the following story. When he first came to Hamilton, straight out of Smicha, straight out of Yeshiva, as a young 24-year-old kid. It's late 1950s. And Hamilton then had one shul in the downtown neighborhood that was dying out. The Jews were moving away. The shul was old. It was dilapidated. The community was at a crossroads. Either they raised money to build a brand new shul in the suburbs, or that was it. It was all over. And Rabbi Green, a young 24-year-old rabbi, comes into the local branch of the Royal Bank of Canada, the biggest Canadian bank. He sits down with the vice president of the bank, of that branch, Mr. Amy was his name. This guy was an Episcopalian Christian. And Rabbi Green says to Mr. Amy, I'd like to borrow some money. How much of a loan would you like? $500,000. $500,000 in the late 1950s. You can imagine what that was worth. And Mr. Amy looks at this young guy, says, that's crazy. I can't give you that kind of money. I'm sorry, goodbye. And then out of curiosity, he says, why do you want $500,000 anyways? So Rabbi Green said, I want to build a synagogue. Mr. Amy said, what kind of synagogue? An Orthodox synagogue. Okay, I'll help you. Have a seat. So Rabbi Green turns to this Episcopalian Christian and says, why do you want to help me? You just told me to get lost. And Mr. Amy said to Rabbi Green, I'll tell you why. Because when I was a kid in the Depression years, late 20s, early 30s, I was growing up in Timmins, Ontario. Timmins, Ontario, if you're in Toronto and you get in a car and you drive north, straight north for 7.5 hours, assuming you don't freeze into ice first, you'll hit Timmins, Ontario. Middle of nowhere. And I was a kid, says Mr. Amy, in Timmins, Ontario, growing up. My father died young. My mother was widowed with little kids and no parnassa. And she was one day in the general store, just the mini Target before there was Target. And she was looking at the price tags on the clothing, on the food items. And the owner of the store says, Mrs. Amy, I heard what happened to your husband. Don't worry about the price. Just take what you need for your kids. And this vice president of the bank now says to Rabbi Green, that owner of the general store was an Orthodox Jew. There once was a small, tiny Orthodox community in Timmins, Ontario, decades ago. And the vice president said to Rabbi Green, this is the first time, 20, 30 years, that I've had opportunity to repay that Jew's kindness. So I want to help you. And if you go to Hamilton today, you go to the shul in Hamilton, you'll see a magnificent building on a huge campus. It houses a shul. It houses an elementary school. It houses a mikvah. Why? All because one frum Jew in the late 20s, early 30s, decided to give tzedakah to a widow, non-Jewish woman, from his neighborhood who needed some help. Do you think for a moment that that Orthodox Jew ever thought that one day he would have been the one to be credited with all the Talmud Torah, all the Tefillah, all the Taras HaMishpacha being observed in Hamilton, Ontario, so that every bit of Torah learned in that yeshiva for decades is on that person's chus? That every word of tefillah uttered in that Beis Knesset for decades is all because of that person's chus? Can you imagine Shemayim, what is being amassed by that individual, that unknown Orthodox Jew from Timmins, Ontario? Ilu hayyodea, had he known what that one small maisa could have accomplished? Can you imagine how much simcha he would have had in doing that mitzvah? It's the koach of the small things that one does in life that we so often underappreciate, but really should never underestimate. Consider some of the lessons of Hanukkah this coming week. Rav Gamliel Rabinovich writes how Hanukkah is all about the koach of the few. Rabin biyad ma'atim. Whereas Rashi and Zos HaBracha writes, Chashmanoi b'yudbeis banav, small family, successfully defeating the mighty Greek army, Revavos, tens of thousands, says Rashi. It's the koach of the few, the koach of the little. It says Rav Gamliel, imagine the following, Mosif v'holech, the message of lighting one candle extra per night. What's the message? What's the mussar in that? That in Avodas Hashem, the koach to accomplish through doing just one small additional added mitzvah, one extra candle a night. Never underestimate the power of the few, the koach of the little, and the significance of that which we deem insignificant. Famous Mashkiach Rav Volbi Zatzal writes in his Ali Shor, Ha'adam nivna dafka mimaisim ktanim, that it's specifically and precisely the small things that a person does that builds the Avodas Hashem of a Jew. It's the small things. It's the one candle extra every night that makes the difference in one's ruchnias, one's Avodas Hashem. And imagine what that means for how we utilize our time. Rav Gamliel writes that during the depression, the recession of the 1990s, when people lost huge fortunes of money, and there were frum Jews who came to Yerushalayim to meet with Rav Gamliel and his Rebbe of Zundel Kreuzer. And they would ask of Zundel, what should we do as a schus? And he would say, learn one extra minute per day. One extra minute per day. That's it. No fasting. Just one extra minute per day? Yeah, just learn one extra minute per day. Why? Because 1 minute. Don't underestimate the koach of 1 minute. The Chafetz Chaim writes in Taras HaBayis, a person can say in 1 minute, approximately, he writes 200 words. Some have found that they can say 140 words in a minute. Either way, 140 words, 200 words per minute. Every word of Talmud Torah is keneged kulam, ish tayag mitzvos. So in the span of 1 minute, you're going to say 200 words of Talmud Torah. That's 200 times 613 mitzvos. In the span of 1 minute, how many malachim will you create who will advocate on your behalf and based in Shalmala? 1 minute of Torah. 1 minute. Making every minute count. So chop 1 minute of Talmud Torah. Significance of the small things in Avodas Hashem. It's the small mitzvahs that we don't appreciate fully that ultimately can make all the difference in our lives. There is a famous, famous Talmud Chacham in Yerushalayim, the Rav of Ezra's Torah, of Yechiel Michel Stern. Huge Talmud Chacham. He has already been mechaber about 70 or 80 Svarim. Big God of the Torah. About 2 years ago, he publicized the following story, which he felt he had a chiv to publicize. He said that he had been experiencing some serious health challenges. Intestinal, stomach, medical issues. And the doctors had told him that he would need a procedure in which they would have to cut a hole in his intestines, perform a colostomy, attach a bag to his stomach. For the rest of his life, he would never be able to use the bathroom normally. He'd have to wear a bag around a hole in his stomach and live the rest of his life that way, cleaning out the bag from all the body waste every day. And he was devastated. This is a Gadol b'Torah, Gadol b'Yisrael, a Rav of Ezra's Torah Shchuna in Yerushalayim. He's a busy man. Can you imagine what that would do to his life? Besides the personal discomfort, inconvenience, it's the blessings that we don't appreciate. And he was told, that's it. There's no other option. And he was scheduled for a surgery. And he couldn't sleep the week before. That Shabbos, he was tossing and turning. He couldn't sleep. He was so worried. And he said that he then had the following dream. He dreamt of an old man that he used to know when he was in Kollel, when Rabbi Chaim Michelstern was in Kollel. He had just been married. He was living in Kollel. And on Fridays, he would go visit an older man living in a nursing home nearby. And this older man was suffering discomfort, stomach pains, wasn't being treated properly. And so Rabbi Stern, then a young Kollel guy, went over to the director of the medical facility and said, you know, this patient is suffering. He needs treatment. He needs a doctor. And the guy said, it's his son's responsibility. Family has to pay for it. Okay, so Rabbi Stern calls up this fellow's son, says, your father's suffering. He needs a doctor. The nursing home has to pay for it. I pay good money to that place per month. It's their responsibility. And neither one wanted to pay. And this poor fellow is suffering. So this Kollel fellow, Rabbi Stern, takes this fellow to the doctor and pays out of his own pocket from his meager Kollel salary to get him the treatment he needs. And this problem occurred again a second time. And weiter, the two sides refused to pay for it. And again, this Kollel guy pays out of his own pocket. A third time it happened. And again, he paid a huge chunk of his Kollel salary to treat this fellow because no one else was going to take care of him. After a month, the son was so embarrassed, he finally took up the expenses himself. And now in his dream, decades later, this old man is long gone. And Rabbi Stern says, I saw this fellow in a dream. And he told me, I went to Beis Din Shalmala. And I said, this man who did me that chesed, he should suffer now the same way I was suffering? And they accepted my argument. You're going to be okay. And Rabbi Stern, when he told this story, he said that week, the doctors, after they examined him again and performed the surgery, told him it wasn't necessary. You're okay, you're fine. So one Maisa Mitzvah that somebody thinks nobody notices, no one cares, no one knows about it, and you don't know in Shemayim what that Maisa Mitzvah means. You don't know what it's going to accomplish. On one occasion, a number of years back, I had an offer for my shul Shabbos morning. And I noticed that there were a group of Hasidim who came to the neighborhood for the offerif. There aren't many Hasidim in full lavush walking the streets of Kew Garden Hills. And that morning in shul, there were a bunch of them. So I looked over to one and said, Shalom Aleichem, where are you from? From Bar Park. Which Hasidus do you associate with? Kloisenberg. I said, oh, did you know the Kloisenberger Rebbe's Zatzal? Of Yekusil Yehuda Halberstam? He says, Avada, I learned in his yeshiva in Kiryat Sanz, Netanya. I said, no. Tell me a maisa from the Rebbe. So this fellow says to me, he says, I was a bachur in yeshiva, and I wasn't the biggest masmid. And so one day he says, I skipped yeshiva to go to Netanya, to go to the big city. It wasn't in Yerushalayim, it was in Kiryat Sanz. So instead of going, where people go in Yerushalayim, he went to Netanya. Comes back the next morning to yeshiva, and the Rebbe's waiting for him. The Rebbe was a no-nonsense kind of guy. Gon be Yisrael. and this teenage kid is walking to the Beis Medrash, and the Rebbe stops him and says to him, "Listen here." He says, "Whether you remember the Gemara Rashi Tosfos you learn in yeshiva or not, or whether you don't, Tos Vesechnit, I don't know. Aber Ein Zach, I want you to promise me one thing. Just tell me that when you leave yeshiva, the first bracha of Shahakol you recite every day, you'll say with Kavana. That's it. And I guarantee you, the entire day will be transformed. The ganze Tag wird anders. Just promise me that one thing. Say one bracha, your first Shahakol every day with Kavana, and that's it. That's all I ask of you." Kreuzenberger thought that that was significant enough, that one bracha be Kavana, to change somebody's day. Shakol mi ebrevaro. Everything is because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I said this over in shul once, and someone came back with a complaint. He said, "Rabbi, I have a problem." "What's the problem?" "Your drasha about the bracha thing. What about it?" "I'm finding I'm having kavana now for more than one bracha a day." Nebuch. Taka problem. Never know the impact of one small ma'isa mitzvah. So when we come to Chanukah this coming week, and Chazal tell us, Halacha tells us, Hadlaka osa mitzvah. Don't worry about how long it's going to burn for. Just put the pieces in place. Just light it. Just light the candle. That's it. It might blow out a minute later, 10 minutes later. As long as you put the oil in place and you light the wick, you light the candle, Hadlaka osa mitzvah, you've accomplished. That's all we're asking. One small ma'isa mitzvah to transform Avodas Hashem. Never underestimate the koach of the small things, because godless greatness is so often found in those small things. Have a wonderful day and a good Shabbos. Stop this here. Okay, thank you.